Natural Solutions with Dr. J, your source for time-tested and cutting-edge natural medicine approaches to optimize your health, with your host, Dr. J. Sordian.
This is Natural Solutions with Dr. J. We are going to start this interview midway as I was speaking with Father Richard Mapplebeck Palmer at his home, and with the intention of doing an interview, and we got caught up in conversation before I had a chance to get started. So we're actually going to start a bit after we had already began speaking. Here is our conversation.
Felt dizzy and just fell down.
Oh my God.
And she was just around the corner there. And she stood guard over me and barked everybody who came near me.
Well, that's good.
But somebody picked me up and put me in the car and brought me around. And by the time I got here, there was ambulance, police.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, the whole lot gathered in my front room. And I staggered in. To my surprise, they were all there.
Uh-huh.
And
they all applauded.
I don't know. I can't remember that. But I couldn't believe that I had a stroke. They asked me my age, and I couldn't remember. But age has always been something which is not a fixed quality with me.
It is. I mean, it's in the time continuum, so what's it mean?
With a three-year-old, I'm 3 years of age. And with a 16-year-old, I'm very much 16 years of age. I had a very traumatic adolescence, and I had a sort of hysterical homophobe as a father.
Oh, interesting.
I say no more.
Yeah,
say no more.
Yeah, interesting.
But he rubbed my nose so much, where, as Blake says, opposition is true friendship.
Yeah.
And that set me up, because it gave me a straight line. I didn't defy my father, but he tried to defy me. And in defining me, so that doesn't fit me. And so I was focused on finding what fit me.
Oh, interesting.
But no, I didn't oppose him or anything.
Right.
He was just there. And my mother died when I was 13. That was another big, significant date for me.
Uh-huh.
Very dramatic, because my father went completely to pieces and forbade anybody to go into the bedroom where she died, which was next door to where we three kids were sleeping.
Uh-huh.
And my father wasn't going to prevent me from saying goodbye to my mum. So I waited till he went out, because he had to go and arrange things with an undertaker. And I remember going in, I was just 13, and it was the 9th of October, 1945. And this was the first dead person I'd ever seen.
Yeah, at age 13.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd nursed her. I mean, when she had the last illness, there was such a shortage of nurses in 1945. My father had to go to work.
This was in England? Shop.
In England, yes. London.
London.
Mm-hmm. Because I lived right
after all the bombing and everything?
Oh, I lived all through the Blitz.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Listen, yeah, 13, that makes sense.
It was a tremendous illustration of the power of the word, listening to Churchill, and also listening to the ranting Hitler.
Did you understand German?
No. But you got the
you could get the feeling from it?
Yes. And I can remember at the age of 16, gazing into the mirror of my mind, and realizing, hey, you are Hitler. And that was devastating. In other words, when I looked at Hitler, I was looking at the shadow of myself.
Huh.
And I hadn't discovered any Jungian psychology at that time. It was just purely intuitive.
So this was 3 years after your mother died, though?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So 13 and 16 are significant.
Interesting.
Time zones. Uh-huh.
It's very interesting. So this is Dr. J and Natural Solutions with Dr. J, and I have the great honor to be sitting here on a beautiful porch at the Abbey.
Yes.
With Father Richard Mapplebeck Palmer, who
yes.
I have mm-hmm. known 20
Oh, yeah.
plus years or something.
20 plus years.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And I first met
him when I was at the YMCA. I gave a very brief talk on acupuncture to a group of theologians. And it was a very eclectic group met once a month or something like that. I don't know how long that happened.
I don't know.
But anyway, afterwards, Father Richard came over and we engaged in a conversation because he had some background in yoga and a variety of other things. And so eventually, he said, well, there's this meeting of the Association of Past Life Research Therapists. Mm-hmm. Why don't we go together? Mm-hmm. And because I studied some hypnotherapy and things, I thought, why not? Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's how we first met.
Your interest in hypnotherapy is something which we'll come up to later.
Yes.
Because one of my algorithms is an algorithm for evolution.
Right.
Star time.
Star time.
Mm.
That's now, which algorithm is this, number 43? Or?
Oh, I don't number them. They're just algorithms.
So the first one is the general progression in life.
Well, the first basic algorithm is basic, our hand, the palm.
Right, exactly, five, yeah.
Little finger, middle finger, climax, conclusion, and then reflection.
Reflection, okay, all right.
Anyway.
And so it's also growth?
Oh, it's birth, growth.
Birth, growth.
Marriage, death, resurrection.
Uh-huh.
It's Exodus, wilderness, establishment, exile, and return. That's the story of Israel.
Uh-huh.
And the story of Jesus. It's his birth, growth. He's out in the wilderness then. And then establishes his ministry. Then he dies. And wow. He rises again, just like a jack-in-the-box.
Right.
Can't keep in a box. And the idiots all reduce that to an ideology, something called Christianity or Judaism or whatever. And it's just universal.
You'd say, from all of you've studied religions and philosophies and so much like up the wazoo, which is one of the great things to talk to you because you're able to integrate so many things together.
Well, I did get a master's in divinity from Cambridge in 1960.
All right.
So,
all right.
Anyway,
and that was after Stonehenge, or that was the...
Yes, after Stonehenge, all yes.
Right.
Oh, yes. You remember the stories of
Stonehenge? Oh, yeah, some of those, yeah. Uh-huh.
And it was a marvelous time in Wiltshire. And it was only later that I discovered crop circles. There were no crop circles in my day.
They didn't exist?
Well, they weren't reported.
Oh, all right, all right. Mm, mm.
So, anyway, where was I?
I was distracting you.
Yes, no, you're not distracting. I don't get distracted. I mean, point in life is not fixing on a point and going towards it.
Mm.
The whole point of life is to let meander like a river.
Oh, I like that.
Yes.
Yeah, it's sort of the Taoist thing. I mean, I sort of felt like that's how I got to, like, going to Japan and studying Japanese and then studying Tai Chi and studying acupuncture and all that. It's sort of a meander. But sometimes I question how efficient or how good that is. Sometimes having goals and setting goals is also important, too.
They're complementary.
Yeah, all right.
But the meander...
Yeah.
Is important.
Very.
And every time you relax from the main road, you meander. So, and I've completely forgotten the algorithm I was going to talk about. Oh, yes, it's star time. So, basically, following Taiga Dashadang, I believe that the fundamental stuff of the universe is awareness.
All right.
Awareness.
That's like the fundamental principle, fundamental material is awareness?
Attention.
Uh-huh.
Attention is as making nets, but in the end, you can't catch the water. The water flows through the net, and that water is awareness. So you can't catch awareness. You are awareness.
Right. Right. Okay. All right. I like that.
I am aware.
Yeah.
So, let's take NASA's prediction of the life of the universe. The timeline is 13.8 billion years ago.
Billion?
Billion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's an American billion. A thousand million. The old English million was a million.
Oh, all right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So,
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it takes a little while to adjust.
Mathematics is always it seems so solid, and yet there's different models.
I have not sung you my song. We all live in a duodecahedron, the duodecahedron, the duodecahedron. We all live in a duodecahedron. And our friends are all aboard. Many more of them live next door. So I'll talk about duodecahedrons later. But the whole combination of fives and sixes is absolutely astonishing.
Oh, all right. So star time.
Yeah. And then Earth time.
Oh, okay.
Earth time. And then, this is what will interest you, then dream time.
Yes.
And each period, they're all continuous.
They
overlap.
Right.
And then...
And they're all occurring right now at the same time.
Yes, sir. And then, awake time.
Mm.
That's the thing which points. But...
That's the thing with points?
Well, the pointing finger.
Ah.
Focusing attention.
Okay.
Focusing attention.
Right.
But there comes a time when focusing attention will just destroy you.
Mm.
So, up to number five.
Yeah.
Aware time.
All right.
So I envisage those as spheres.
Yeah, I do too.
Spheres. Mm.
Yeah.
So,
or at least dimensions, I envision as spheres. But actually, yeah, the same thing. I think that's even in the back of one of my chapters talking about that too.
Well, I mean,
I must have been channeling you when I was thinking of that.
Well, once we meet, we've always met.
Yeah.
It's just a question of either this life or next life we'll come back again.
Which dimensions, which time?
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's a basic algorithm.
All right.
Now, there was another algorithm that I was going to talk about.
Mm.
Well, it doesn't matter.
I don't know. That's been maybe four at this point.
Hmm?
Four algorithms, perhaps,
the
you mentioned.
Multitudes of algorithms.
Yeah.
Whenever I meander, there's an algorithm waiting for me.
And so these are all different volumes of your books?
They appear.
They appear.
And disappear.
As they should.
Absolutely.
Not the disappear part necessarily.
Like the Cheshire Cat.
Yes, there you go.
I love Lewis Carroll.
Yeah.
And very interestingly, because I thought the films of Harry Potter were absolutely stunning.
I did too. And the books were great.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, the big thing that sealed that for me was the eighth volume, was Harry Potter recognizing and accepting death.
Ah, yes.
That was a profound chapter.
Mm.
And to me, it's one of the pivots of the book.
Uh-huh.
And then the postscript, 19 years later.
Uh-huh.
And not many people would recognize that.
Why, it was 19, you mean?
Yeah, 19-year cycle is the lunar cycle. On our 19th birthdays, the moon is more or less in exactly the same spot of the sky as when we were born. And that cycle repeats only every 19 years, or actually it's 19 and a half, or 18 and a half, I can't quite remember.
Mm-hmm.
But it's roughly 19 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that...
Which is sort of
the
solar cycle having to add a day every 4 years in order to be target. Yeah.
I thought, my God, this girl knows her stuff.
Yeah.
I like her.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing, when you can think of the influence of Lewis Carroll, who was, after all, a mathematics don.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because... Queen Victoria was so excited by reading. She wrote him a fan letter and asked him to be sure to send him her next book. And the next book was a mathematical treatise.
Oh, interesting.
Whether she was amused or not, we don't know. Now I've put me back in the groove. I get excited now. I can't remember what I was going to say. But the one of the things which so impressed me about the Harry Potter, the choice of location, I mean, the whole Diagon Alley was superbly filmed. But when they had their hall meetings at Hogwarts,
mm-hmm.
Do you know where the hall was filmed? Christchurch Dining Hall.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
An archetypal Oxbridge setting.
Uh-huh.
And considering she never went to Oxbridge.
Oxbridge is like Oxford and Cambridge.
Yes, yeah. Oxbridge. Mm.
Just to clarify that for the listening audience.
I went to the bridge.
And myself.
I went to the bridge and left the oxen across the river.
So it was in Christchurch where they had that setting of that.
Yes.
And they filmed it all there. And mm-hmm. Plus a lot of special effects, obviously.
Oh, yes.
Virtually.
Yeah. But the other thing I must say, you remember what last Saturday was? It was the 19th anniversary of the birth of young Harry Potter's son. And so platform 19 and three quarters.
Oh, yeah. Was it 19 and three quarters or was it 9 and three quarters?
Oh, I'm sorry, 9 and three quarters. Yeah, you're quite right. 9 and three quarters.
I was trying to remember
the whole
what it was,
crowd of Hogwarts enthusiasts had gathered there. And the and the little actor, the little dwarf who plays the part of the Gringle.
Chappie,
was there. And they were all there to see Harry Potter Jr. Off to Hogwarts. And the train always left 9 3/4 on the 1st of September every year.
They just did that?
Yes. Last Saturday.
No. So that's on YouTube or somewhere? Or on,
Sure.
I'll have to check it out.
Oh, yeah. You can check everything on YouTube. It's marvelous. What were we talking about? Oh, yes, jungleization. So
this, perhaps we hadn't already started recording or anything, but we were talking about the progression of human beings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you said that recently there is discussion or the new theory is that human beings started in Australia, not in Africa.
No. Well, hominids all over the place, but gradually, I'll come back to that. But
so jungleization was occurring in Asian tropics.
In Asian tropics. And it lasted, and it's never stopped. I mean, it's still jungleization in the Amazon.
Yeah.
But civilization is a very, very new development in our evolution.
Right.
So you have localization from about 50,000 years ago, civilization less than 10,000.
Yeah, the great civilization started, like Egypt or?
Egypt is a young one.
That's a young one. Okay, like Babylon.
I mean, one of the devastating disasters.
Yeah.
Was, you know about the Black Sea Flood? Oh, okay, let me enlighten you.
Yeah.
Woodhull Institution in Massachusetts.
All right, I know of that.
Sent out researchers to the Red Sea and the Bosphorus to examine the depth and things of the lake.
Huh.
Of the, well, because the...
The Red Sea or the Black Sea?
Black Sea. Did I say Red Sea?
You said... Red Sea.
Black Sea.
First you said the Black Sea. You were talking about the Black Sea, then you switched to Red Sea, and I thought, okay, I've got that in my mind. I know the geography, and is it linked to the Black Sea? Maybe not. The
one
Bosphorus
of my favorite,
definitely is.
Favorite music groups was 10cc, if you remember them.
Oh, 10cc, yeah.
So they
sent researchers to the Bosphorus and the Black Sea to see how deep they were.
And from their research... They discovered that at one time, at the bottom of the Red Sea... Black Sea, sorry.
Yeah.
Black Sea. Sorry. Correct me every time.
I'm just trying to follow this.
Should encourage anybody viewing it. A silly old idiot.
We love these kind of conversations. So.
Well, when you get to the age of 85, all your... I mustn't say... mess ups. I nearly said the F word.
Oh, all right, that one, yeah. Not just the S.
You just roar with laughter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good. I want to catch up to that.
Yeah. I mean,
early.
Again.
I need to do that early.
I digress again, so remind me where I put...
The Black Sea or the Red Sea.
You talk about Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
I used to visit one of my parishioners who had Alzheimer's.
Uh-huh.
And... I realized that what was important was to have fun.
Mm.
And so she lived in a retirement home which had a fairly nice garden, and there were a cage of canaries and things like that. So she took me around the garden.
Oh, nice.
And then we got back, and then 5 minutes later I said, you know, I do like this garden. Could you show? Oh, would you like me to show? And we went back three times.
Exactly. Yeah, with Alzheimer's, there's so much in the moment.
Oh, yeah, yes. And that's good. I mean,
yeah. That's one of the one of the times. Is that awareness?
Yeah.
Awareness time? Or?
Awareness. Mm-hmm. I, of course, I remember a Hollywood film director was a lesbian, and her mother was absolutely disgusted with her until she got Alzheimer's. And then, of course, she couldn't remember that her daughter was a lesbian.
Right.
But when her daughter brought her partner, she said, what a nice young lady.
So there is something to progressing in Alzheimer's.
Every condition has its own virtues.
There you go.
Now, put me back in the groove.
All right, so there was something about the Black Sea.
Oh, yes, here we go. That's very important. And this is... they
civilization, perhaps. There was a civilization.
No, sidetrack me on that one. If you imagine the Black Sea and the Mediterranean, the ice is continuing to melt.
Right.
Is only about, I think about...
This is five, ice age as it's melting.
Well, the ice age melt. It's been melting for at least 5,500 years.
All right.
The water level
is rising.
In the Mediterranean is rising.
Right.
And any sensible person could see this, who's actually there looking at it.
And who was there for 5,000 years.
No. Just there for 10 years, they could see. But you could see the level of water rising above the level of the basin.
Yeah.
Or you knew that it would happen.
Oh, okay. All right.
And this event happened somewhere about 5,500. No, because it's BC, so it's 7,500.
Right, all right. 1,000 years ago. From 2017, which is...
If in imagination, they reckon that it took 2 years for the basin of the Black Sea to fill with water.
And it was coming in not only from the Mediterranean, but also from the...
Oh, those were minimal.
Drainage.
Those were minimal.
Yeah.
Because those rivers,
flowing in,
evaporation would deal with that.
Oh.
And of course, it was fresh water.
Yeah.
This is salt water coming in.
Right.
And the two marine archaeologists who discovered all this woodhole, reckoned that it took 2 years for the Black Sea to fill up from the Dardanelles right through to the Crimea.
Ah.
And the volume of water was 3,000 feet at least.
Wow.
Now,
God, that's
in imagination, you know, where imagination is so important, stand...
Half a mile.
Stand on the hillside and imagine yourself as a 16-year-old who climbed the hill with one of his mates. And you're looking down on your homeland. And, of course, you can't even see over the horizon. And then, 2 years later, if you manage to escape the flood, you come, and where you were at the top of a hill is now the level of the water.
Yeah.
And in my imagination, the effect of that would be so profound that you would suffer survivor guilt.
Interesting.
Why have I lived and all my friends and family have drowned? Why me? And that survivor guilt would have to be atoned, because obviously God was angry, or the gods, or whatever.
Right.
And so you'd have to offer sacrifices to atone. And that's where I believe that the whole guilt associated with sacrifice, with... After all, this is at least 4,000 years before Judaism.
Right.
And that was such a devastating. And
I didn't realize sacrifice was associated with guilt.
Well, that's my.
That's your spin on it.
Yeah, my spin.
Yeah, okay. I can understand.
Why kill?
Yeah.
You have to atone.
Uh-huh.
And one of the big themes in Christian theology is the atonement.
Right.
Or the at-one-ment. How do you become one with God when there's so much evil? And you,
at-one-ment.
So,
at-one-ment. I've never broken that word down
before. But etymologists would agree that the Indo-European languages all have the same root, and they'd be rooted in that civilization.
Mm-hmm. Around the
Black Sea. And that's 3,000 years of civilization, villagization, which was disappeared in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
3,000 years of culture.
So they did research and they actually found things at the bottom of the Black Sea that...
Now, that I can't say.
Okay.
This may be subsequent research. And uh-huh. Whether it's been financed or not, I wouldn't know.
I see.
But the basic event, uh-huh. I think, is Pucca, is correct.
I mean, it's certainly possible there were people living there.
Oh, not possible, but very probable.
Oh, yeah.
And then the languages and things radiate out
uh-huh.
from the Black Sea.
Huh. Well, that's very fascinating.
Mm.
Because language is definitely a natural solution.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's important to have language, mm-hmm. communicate in this kind of interaction. For me, it revitalizes me.
Well, there's a book I've never forgotten reading by Simeon Potter called Our Language.
Uh-huh.
And in it, he pointed out two great connections that I remember. In Sanskrit, the word for brother is brata.
Brata.
And as brata goes north, it becomes brother.
Uh-huh.
As the languages go south, it becomes frata. Frata.
Frata.
So frata...
Oh, frata. Frata, yeah, like fraternity.
Frata, which is the Latin.
All right.
And brother, which is... all have the same root.
Uh-huh.
And he also points out the way in which the English language combines both the French and the English.
Right.
And the French was used for the animal when it was dead on the table.
You mean when the English used the word, the French words, it was just with dead?
No. No. In 1066, when the bloody French invaded us for the last time.
Oh, okay. 1066. Okay, all right.
We got rid of them in 1818 with the Battle of whatever it was.
Uh-huh. You're speaking from the perspective of the English.
The two languages came together. When they came together...
Okay.
The two languages merged, but the French, who were the aristocracy by that time, and the Saxons and the Anglo-Saxons were the serfs, the peasants. This is the origin of the class distinction in England. You've got the bosses and the slaves.
Uh-huh.
And the bosses...
So it's like the Prince of Wales and things like that from French?
Well, yes, I mean, the English aristocracy is descended from the French.
All right.
It has a blood infusion from the Germans. What did I say? Oh, yes. On the table, we have pork,
uh-huh.
venison, mutton, chicken. Pullet on the table.
Uh-huh.
But in the fields, you've got pigs, you've got cows, beef.
Right.
You've got, anyway.
So the language is different, too.
The inherited vocabulary.
Yes.
But the reason why the words are different is because of our history.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And then look at the difference between hide and skin.
Mm.
Now, those are both of Germanic origin,
uh-huh.
One is Danish and the other is one of the other languages. But and so remember that before William the Conqueror conquered us in 1066, we had the Dane law, the Danes. One of the earliest kings of England was a Dane called Canute.
King Canute,
who all his courtiers told him he was so great he could actually command the sea to stop. And he said, well, I'll show them this is bullshit. And he got them to pull up a chair, set it up at the seaside, and then demonstrated in no way could he stop the tide coming in. So stop licking me up. I don't like it. So let's go back to the evolution of humanity.
Yes.
Then you begin with localization.
Right.
There's hominids all spotted all over.
Uh-huh.
But gradually, by intermarriage or...
marriage? There was actually...
Well, I say intermarriage.
Oh, okay.
Intercopulation.
Right. Biological...
Yeah.
Joining.
Whatever.
Breeding.
But let's call all that period localization.
Uh-huh.
And so this is why localization is such a root part of all humanity.
And all education, this is...
Yeah. And so although I was at Oxford and Cambridge, I then came to Berkeley.
Yes.
Which was my finishing school.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm
And so was Berkeley the junglization part?
No. That was very much a civilization.
As far as education. Yeah. But there's localization, junglization.
Junglization. Well, I'm jumping in.
It's all
localization,
right.
Junglization.
Civilization?
Yeah, civilization. I think I missed out one.
Yeah.
And then, oh, dear me, my poor brain. Let me put the needle back in the groove.
All right.
This is the algorithm.
Yes.
Localization, junglization, civilization, globalization.
There you go. All right.
And then finally, humanization. And the human species is waiting for all humans to, as well, not be on the same wavelength, but be interrelated or together.
Mm.
And then...
And that's the globalization? Is that the thumb or is that the forefinger? We haven't even gotten the forefinger yet.
Globalization. And then finally, humanization.
There we go. All
but,
right.
Well, under globalization, you know what I mean by emergent qualities in evolution? You put together hydrogen and oxygen.
Yeah. All right. And the two together.
You got water,
right?
And water is completely different.
That's right.
So I always regard water as the crown of the evolution of matter.
Uh-huh.
Because water is the substance, basically.
Oh, yeah.
In which life evolves.
That's true.
So between the
which is what we mostly are.
between the hydrosphere and the atmosphere, which is both, we've got the hydrosphere.
Yes. Between?
Atmosphere, lithosphere.
Lithosphere.
There's rocks.
Oh, all right.
But they're all spherical globes.
Yeah.
So what I imagine the existence of the sphere of awareness, this is already around us.
Yeah.
And all we have to do is, like Jesus, ascend into heaven.
Hmm.
Mind you, have to die first. There's a snag.
Yeah,
but dying is okay.
Yeah, I call that there's the corporeal existence.
Yeah,
that corpus.
Yeah,
and I don't know if it's four-dimensional reality.
I have to think about that.
You know, time and space. Mm. I mean, I think this corporeal, this thing here.
Yeah.
It's a time-space phenomenon. There's other stuff that's infusing it back and forth, but once this stops, like breathing and beating and all that, then there's much more concentration in the other spheres.
Mm. My college at Cambridge was the sixth oldest college, and it is called Corpus Christi and the Blessed Virgin.
Uh-huh.
Don't forget the lady.
Yeah.
Don't forget the girls. And so it's Jesus and Mary.
Uh-huh.
And of course, being medieval, there was a tremendous devotion to Our Blessed Lady, who, as Jung said, was the fourth person of the Trinity.
Fourth person of the Trinity.
Well,
uh-huh.
So it becomes a quaternity.
Oh, right, right, right.
And now I've forgotten what I was going to say. I derail myself all the time.
It's all right. I mean, we're talking about awareness and about death. In order to go to the next level, you have to die.
Mm-hmm. I don't hear the dog barking. Where is she? She's perhaps
gotten She's probably enjoying the conversation.
Gone inside.
I'm channeling the dog. That's
good, yeah.
Yeah. My source of...
Yeah, come here, bitch.
My source of intellectualism is a dog.
Yeah. And don't forget how what dog spells when you spell it backwards.
Exactly.
Mm.
Doggy.
Dog. God.
Yeah. Mm. So, would you say these kind of discussions are important for health?
Well, I call them conversations, which require two people.
Yes, yes, yes.
So remember,
a discussion would be more.
Well, in technically, the fourth gospel, St. John's Gospel, the opening sentence is "In the beginning is conversation, and conversation is with God, and conversation is God. All things come to be organito, come to be in conversation. And without conversation, nothing comes to be that comes to be." And all I've done is to translate Hologos, which was the fourth gospel, probably written in Ephesus, and it was written in Greek. And in Greek philosophy, Hologos was the divine reason, the reason in everything. And so Jesus was interpreted as the enfleshment of the divine reason.
Ah.
But it's a single thing. It's the Word. And of course, there's always in theology a balance between monotheism and polytheism.
Mm.
And the monotheists were always demonizing the polytheists, and the polytheists were always demonizing them. And you require both. One of the great things about James Hillman, the psychologist, is that he talked about the pluralism of our dreams and the fact that you can't press them all into one interpretation. And so I forget now what the tradition is called, not psychoanalytic, I forget now. I've written a paper about it, but I can't remember. oh dear. No.
It's not psychoanalysis, it's sort of dream analysis or something?
No.
I want to just check and make sure this video is still up.
There you are. Oh, we're doing fine.
Yeah.
Good job.
I assume you can edit this.
Oh, yeah.
Just as well. I'm always editing and re-editing whatever I've written.
Yeah.
It's changing all the time.
Well, that's also a way to write books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you do that? Do you just dictate and then have it transcribed?
Oh, no, I can't dictate. I mean, all I do is tap out on the computer.
Yeah.
And then... So I've got a draft.
Composing as if it's a piano.
Well, just composing as in compost. Shit upon shit.
Transforming, transmuting with the...
Yeah, yeah. You know, making sure that the shit is nourishing to the plants which will grow from it.
There you go.
I have no idea what plants will grow.
Uh-huh.
I'm focused on the shit.
Creating the fertile substrate.
Yes, absolutely. And so Oh, now, have I talked about...
So there was something about... I want to get the education. So the civilization has this localization, junglization...
Civilization.
Civilization, then globalization.
Globalization.
And then humanization.
And humanization.
So, but there is something about... Earlier we were talking, before we started recording, that had to do with education and how it's not quite right because you're boxed in. It's
This is
didn't that have something to do with this?
This is Alison Gopnik, who
Alison Gopnik,
the Adam Gopnik's older sister.
Oh,
Adam Gopnik is the great writer in the New Yorker.
All right.
And he's just written, his last piece was a fascinating one on Buddhism.
Uh-huh.
And its impact. But anyway, I'm sidetracking myself again. But Alison's book is called The Gardener and the Carpenter. And she's saying that the whole peril of parenting in America at the moment is that they're being brainwashed into being carpenters, parents, instead of being gardeners.
Mm.
And so the tremendous importance of playtime for children. And when I consider the Sabbath, which to me is a very central ritual, you have Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then if you map those out in hexagrams, so each day is a hexagram, when you join Friday to Sunday, wow! And a hexagram appears in the middle immediately.
Oh.
And that's a tremendous visual metaphor for the Sabbath.
Huh.
For the Sabbath is not a work time, it's a play time. Mm. As Krishna says to Arjuna in the Lord's Song, the Bhagavad Gita, I work, but in all my works I rest. And that's essentially what Luther discovered when he was reading Gospels, that the Gospels are working about trying to get into heaven, or the rest of it, and confession and paying for your absolution. We are justified by faith, except the faith has now been corrupted to mean an ideology. So I prefer the word trust. Mm. The Danish word for faith is very much like the word for trust. Oh. Trust. Mm. And you are justified by doing nothing and just resting and leaving all the work to God. Isn't that lovely?
That is wonderful.
And that is what playing is.
Yeah.
Playing has no purpose.
Right.
It's just fun.
Very,
and so,
very important.
And the church makes sort of sex into a work which must be justified, and sex is justified by procreating another.
Yes, right.
And the coming of children is just an added benefit. Oh dear, I'm a naughty monkey.
Well, definitely. I mean, you know, in one of my books, Outsmarting the Dementia Epidemic.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
I do have a chapter, and the subtitle is 7 Key Memory Care Actions to Avoid Alzheimer's and Successfully Keep Your Brain Safe, Sharp, and Sexy into the Future.
Yeah.
And so there is a chapter in here about sex and the importance of sex for your brain. So physiologically, it is also very important to have that playtime.
Well, Alison Gopnik is superb because...
Chapter 10.
Yeah.
S is for sexy.
Alison went through a terrible time when she broke up from her first husband and the father of her children. And she took refuge in doing, because she is by training an Oxford philosopher.
Uh-huh.
And she rediscovered Hume. Because Hume was stayed at a place near Paris called La Flèche. And Nerthe de la Flèche was a very, very important Jesuit monastery or whatever. And
in Paris?
Near Paris. And so she writes on very, very eloquently on David Hume. Mm. And the thing is, the Jesuits at that time...
Need to take some water?
Oh, I think perhaps. Is, had many contacts with East Asia.
What time is that?
1600s.
All right. Oh, yeah, definitely. The Jesuits are major colonizers. And India, China, Japan. I mean, they Goa, places
and
like that.
And it's through their writings that Buddhism sort of came to Europe. And at La Flèche, Alison shows there were leading Jesuit Buddhist scholars.
Interesting.
And that David Hume, as a young man about 23, 24, had just been through quite a devastating depression, discovered Buddhism. Mm. And this is what he puts on his treatise on human nature. Not by name, but the influence is there.
Uh-huh.
And so the big thing about Hume is that really the ego is non-existent. There's a kind of transparency to the human being. And she found that very, very refreshing. But what I was going to say is she has this lovely little bon mot. At 15, sex, she says, leads to love. At 55, love leads to sex. And I thought, absolutely brilliant girl. Brilliant. So there's somewhere I haven't finished.
So education-wise, would you say that in the United States, the education system is too focused on, or parents are too focused on directing their children in a particular direction?
And so children should have plenty of playtime.
Right.
And when I compare my academic history with those of a comparable teenager, I'm appalled at what's happening in America. Mm. I mean, I received a fairly good education, but I passed an exam at 13, which enabled me to go to the high school as a public school. The next exam was when I was 16, called General School Certificate. At 18, you had the higher school certificate. Now, to get into matriculation into Cambridge at that time, I just had to have what they considered an acceptable score on higher school certificate.
Uh-huh.
And my matriculation consisted by having an interview, which I prefer, a conversation with the tutor of Corpus. This was in the winter of 1953, just after the Queen's coronation. And
winter of 53.
Pardon?
The winter of 53 was when you had your conversation.
Yes, with the tutor. Yes. And then comes spring.
Uh-huh.
So I'm using winter as the first thing. And it was that winter that Crick and Watson finalized the double helix when they were researching in Cavendish Laboratory, which is at the back of Corpus. And they dash round the churchyard of St. Bennet's, and opposite in Bennet Street is the Eagle Pub.
Were you visualizing it just then?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You had your eyes closed.
Oh, yes.
I wondered what process is going on there.
I'm tremendous on imagery.
Yes, yeah.
Is it visualization?
Yeah.
And that coincided. And my second year, I had a room in the Eagle Yard. Corpus owned.
Uh-huh.
One of the premises owned by Corpus. And I always enjoy the fact that I was my matriculation, which was just a conversation, there was no exam or anything like that. Because we were all gentlemen.
Ah.
I said, gentlemen don't do exams.
Interesting.
No. And then, so I've gone to corpus. The first exam was at the end of the first year. No more exams until the third year, when I took my finals. No, I mean, you had your tutor, and you take him your essays. But the essays were a basis for conversation. And I had the tremendous privilege of being tutored one-on-one by a very scholarly monk called Father Roland Walls, who was the chaplain of the college. And I went every Friday afternoon at about, I think it's 4 o'clock, and we would just sit and have a conversation. And he wasn't particularly interested in what I'd known. I mean, he was so excited by theology generally. And his great excitement at my time there was Charles de Foucault, who had founded a new order, les petits frères et les petites sœurs de Jésus, the little brothers and sisters of Jesus. And they didn't live in monasteries, they lived in working class homes and worked for their living. And he had a great admiration for Charles de Foucault. Charles de Foucault was in fact assassinated by North Africans, some North African tribe. So he died, in fact, a martyr. But he was an amazing man. And dear old Roland was fascinated by him. But the whole point about my tutorials, I had a series of 9 semesters with Roland, every Friday, same time. And it was first year, second year, third year, 9 years, three years. Yeah. And it was mainly gentlemanly, scholarly, monastic conversation. And that's remained with me ever since. And two things that I learned from him, because as chaplain, he was very concerned that all the evangelicals have condemned everybody else in the college as non-Christians. Right. So how do you deal with it? He said, Richard, he got a little group of us, you go to all their meetings, and you sit and you listen. You are there just to be present, not to argue, but to listen and to practice chastity of the tongue. No speaking. He looked at me and said, and that, Richard, will probably be the only chastity you'll master. And everybody roars with laughter. And that has... that and also hospitality. And just by listening, you're offering the hospitality of your presence. And when I chaplained the young atheists in Berkeley, that was still Roland's influence. You sit and you listen. You're not there to convert, because everybody's saved. Jesus is the savior of the world. Now, he's either the savior of the whole world or he's not. So don't limit him. And you'll say, because he's chosen you, not because you've chosen him. So we're all here because, as it were, God has willed it. And so we can all live in the duodecahedron. And our friends are just next door. Not enemies. And there are no such thing as enemies. Only strangers you've not made friends with yet.
Very good.
That's marvelous. So I see the humanization process as one in which government has, as it were, a governor, like, you know, which controls the mechanism, over speed, but the governor not part of the mechanism. It controls the mechanism. So in all forms of government, you need a non-political governor. Now, in England, we have the monarchy,
right.
Not political. In America, you have the president. And remember, George Washington did not want to be identified with either of the two parties that were quarreling already.
I had forgotten that.
Oh, yeah.
If I ever knew it.
Yeah. Well, he was actually following the monarchic principle. No, they can call it monarchy. Yeah. But the principle is there. Yeah. Uh-huh. And so when you see dear old Donald Trump, I see this as the death throes of party presidency. This is what happens when you allow the president to be captured, or the president allows himself to be captured by a party. Mm. And what's interesting at the moment, and we're talking now in... What?
September the 6th, 2017. Something like that.
I don't know what she's excited about. Oh, it's probably the postman, yeah. The post lady. Postperson.
There you go. Postal carrier. The carrier.
Do I mean an after person? A postperson. But Donald Trump should be seen by everybody as the last sort of president who's been captured by parties. And at the moment, he's courting the Democrats because he says,
"Yeah, I noticed that." Yeah.
But the danger is you become controlled by the Democrats. Or at least the Democrats will think they're trying to control him. And one of the interesting things psychologically about Donald Trump is that, as I believe that there's a kind of fundamental algorithm at work which transcends our conscious intentions, that in Donald Trump there may be a mysterious divine providence at work.
Divine providence?
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, he's busy extracting America from her role as an imperialist power, or under the guise of making America great, he's actually making America little, which is not a bad thing.
Which is not a bad thing.
Oh, no. Because the imperialistic attitudes and the capitalist attitudes of America have been devastating. But under Trump, extraordinarily, this great businessman will be decapitalizing America.
And in my book, Donald Trump, I have, I forget, maybe 15 chapters. I tried to make it extremely small.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's very difficult for me because I like to expound upon things.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that, first of all, I have no idea if he's a great businessman. I know...
Oh, he's not.
No.
He's a great scoundrel.
Exactly.
Scoundrel.
How many times has he been bankrupt? And I'm sure any tax forms... would show that he absolutely owns nothing. He's massively in debt. And yet that does parallel the United States.
Yes.
So there's a certain odd irony that
the symbolic
head is just as economically screwed up as the whole country.
Yes.
But
the country gets the president it deserves.
Yeah, I know. It's tragic.
Well, America in that sense is tragic.
Yeah.
But after tragedy comes comedy.
Uh-huh. Oh, there's definitely enough comedic material.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable.
In one of my algorithms for the features of the linguistic landscape, the first feature is metonymy. One thing stands for another. Metonymy.
Metonymy.
Yeah. That's the first principle. A metonymy is one thing standing for another. And so the example is Washington, as a metonymy, stands for the U.S. government.
Washington, D.C.?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we don't
Not
talk
Washington,
about the U.S.
Not the guy.
No. Washington,
D.C., the
D.C.
District of Columbia.
That is a metonymy for... the government. So you say...
Federal government.
Yeah. Washington believes this, or Washington believes that. Washington does this.
Right.
And the same thing that Westminster for England.
Oh, I see. All right.
Or was it in France, it's the Palais de something.
Or the Kremlin or the...
One thing stands for another. Hieroglyphs are visual representations which stand for something else.
Uh-huh.
If you go back about 10,000 years in Egypt, you see that this mysterious cultural thing, that the Milky Way actually coincides on the eastern horizon with the Nile. So it looks right. as if the Nile is flowing up into the sky, and then it comes back. So, and that was a tremendous impact on the Egyptian, what I call cultural imagination. And so all the pictures of ships sailing up the sky, taking the soul up to heaven and coming back again. So for me, as at 85, the river of my life is flowing out into an estuary. And then comes the sea. But if you remember D.H. Lawrence's poem, "Have you built your ship of death, or have you?" Do you know that one?
No, I don't know.
Oh, it's one of his fabulous poems. And as a 17-year-old, I was very excited discovering D.H. Lawrence. One of the myths that I enjoy is the myth of my soul in a boat after death ascending into heaven and finding a harbor. So heaven is a harbor, and then the process will begin again and I will be reborn. There'll be another life. This life is not the end. Anyway, there's metonymy.
All right.
Next is metaphor. Now, metaphor is not one thing standing, but one little sequence of actions which stand for another. So we talk about falling from grace. Falling is a metaphor. And it's the process of making a descent. And I audited a seminar by George Lakoff on metaphors. And in 1980, he published another companion a superb book called Metaphors We Live By. And so all our language is metaphorical. And this is where fundamentalists and others who insist on the literal meaning of the Bible lead it all astray. They actually destroy our imagination. Because we fail to see that a metaphor is a metaphor.
Right.
And I like to say, what is a metaphor?
It is, yes.
And then after metaphors, you see, you've got one thing standing for another thing. You've got one little feature of life standing for another feature of life. Then there's myth. A myth is a whole story which stands for another story. So when I read the story of Israel, I'm reading the story of many peoples. They all follow the same pattern. Same algorithm. And then the story of Jesus, again, it's the same pattern, is a myth which is, takes a feature of the life of one man and let it stand for the life of all men. So it's metaphor, metonymy, and then perspective.
I thought there was going to be another M word.
No.
Perspective.
M is followed by P. I'm Applebeck Palmer, remember?
There you go. All right. I like that. That's good.
MP.
Yeah.
Member of Parliament. Now, and this is on the pointing finger, because all of us have a perspective, but there's a possibility for every individual to have six perspectives.
Only six?
Oh, looking up and looking down. As you know, standing by the flooded Death Sea Valley, looking down, and then looking up at the sky, looking sideways, left and right. And then you have to looking forwards, and then always a blind spot, looking backwards. So there's six ways you can look, but here's the irony. There is a seventh way, and don't forget the seventh way. Why? Because there's only one way inward.
Right. Right.
So there's an algorithm for our perspectives. And so after those six perspectives, there is the thumb up is the irony. So after tragedy comes comedy. And the end is not tears, but roars of laughter. And this is what the psalmist said when he said, those who sow in tears will one day reap in joy.
Hmm.
Or reap in laughter, I can't remember.
Uh-huh.
But so
the, and that all used to be in Greek?
Hebrew.
Hebrew. The Psalms were, yeah.
Yes, Psalms.
Yeah, the Old Testament is Hebrew. Yes, and the yes. New?
New is written in Greek.
Original.
The original. But original would have been Aramaic.
Aramaic, yeah. Right.
But we've lost all the Aramaic. Except in the words of Christ on the cross, Lama, Lama, Sabachthani. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? That's interesting, the actual Greek version, that cry is written Aramaic.
Huh.
And so this is what Hume would mean by the dissolution of the ego. Because Jesus taught us to pray Our Father, but his cry of dereliction was to my Father.
My Father versus Our Father?
Hmm. But that's again part of this oscillation between demonization and idolization. I think we've talked enough about time.
I think we've got a good bit of material here.
Yep. It'll be interesting to see how you edit that, my friend. And then we'll go inside.
All right.
Because of the whole abbey to explore. And the garden at the back is just as exciting. It has a stream and all the rest of it.
Well,
I don't know whether they didn't have a stream when you were here last.
I think there was. So maybe not.
Oh, hello.
So I hope you enjoyed this very special episode.
Oh, yes.
Of Natural Solutions with Dr. J. Definitely. Unique experience, exciting for me. I enjoyed it very much. Thank you very much for sharing your wisdom and your humor and your perspectives.
Don't forget the humor.
Your perspectives and your metonymies and your myths and the whole thing. So that's it for this episode. And
one last thing.
Yes.
Back to algorithms.
All right.
In academia, we have two main streams, the humanities and the sciences.
Uh-huh.
And on the humanities, on the sciences, you spell algorithm the usual way.
Which is?
A-L-G-O-R-I-T-H-M.
All right, yeah.
But for humanities purposes, I spell it differently. A-L-G-O, capital R with a hyphen, capital R-H-Y-T-H-M, a rhythm.
Ah.
This is algorithms.
Ah.
Because all begins in rhythm.
Uh-huh. Hence, algo means all?
No, algorithm is just...
No, I know what... I love using that word all the time. I use that word algorithm. That is a very interesting algorithm. Or this, I throw that out all the time. All the time. But I've never used algo rhythm.
No, but algorithm is a bulgarization of... an Arab master of arithmetic who lived in one of those Central Asian republics.
Persia, maybe. Pardon. Who was it?
Something ending in Stan.
Okay.
Can you remember any of the Stans in Central Asia?
We have well, Pakistan. Afghanistan.
Further north.
Kazakhstan.
Kazakhstan, which has tremendous reserves of metal and other precious metals.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, it's a dictatorship.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's going on another subject altogether.
So there was a mathematician who actually used that term.
But so it's not an authentic Arab word at all.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Although we owe Arab culture so much. But don't tell the federal authorities. But all our arithmetic is done in Arab numerals.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, we're not Roman numerals.
Oh, that's true. Good point. Okay.
Would you?
If you're interested in finding out more about how you or your relatives can avoid dementia, buy the book, Outsmarting the Dementia Epidemic, 7 Key Memory Care Actions to Avoid Alzheimer's and Successfully Keep Your Brain Safe, Sharp, and Sexy into the Future. If you'd like to learn more about how to get an appointment with Dr. Sordian, please call the Redwood Clinic at 510-849-1176. And for information, go to theredwoodclinic.com. Thank you. If you'd like to be informed of upcoming podcasts, please subscribe to Natural Solutions with Dr. J so you know exactly when the next episodes will be coming up. Thanks a lot and have a great day.